south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, before I get started with the meat and potatoes of today's show, which in Spanish would be papas con carne, similar to chili con carne, which I'm sure most of you have heard of, because like me, when you were a kid, you probably ate that stuff out of a can from Dinty Moore. Chili con carne. Chili with meat. But you probably never knew what it actually meant in English until now. Anyway, I would like to formally announce that my January Expat Wisdom Seminar is all chalked in and ready to go. So just to give you a little advance notice on how it's going to go down, Saturday, January 18th will be the fly-in day where we collect everyone at the airport. That is, most of the attendees. Some will inevitably come a few days or even weeks early to do some exploring on their own. Anyway, that night, Saturday night, the 18th, we'll have our meet and greet at the hotel. And then from then on, it'll be balls to the wall for 6 days. Half classroom, half boots on the ground. Ending Thursday night, June 23rd in the wee hours. And then on Friday, January 23rd, many people will have to fly back home to jump back on their treadmill in Boston, Cincinnati, Cleveland, or wherever. Though I'm 100% sure, like all my past seminars, that people will elect to stay on days, if not weeks, after the formal event to explore on their own or make the move permanently. That always happens. And of course, for anyone who does come to the seminar, my Expat Wisdom crew will help you arrange your before and after trips too. And that, of course, can be done way ahead of time, directly through our 100% bilingual event coordinator. Of course, at no extra cost, but only for those who are attending the seminar. And by the way, if you are coming down early or staying after the seminar for any length of time, long or short, I can give you great tips on where to go and what to do. I'm talking about hotels, restaurants, spectacular locations, side trips, boating excursions and such. And right now there are a few very active volcanoes in the region, some that are blowing sky high every day. Yet, you can still get very, very close to them. Now, that's an experience of a lifetime, especially when the ground shakes under your feet. And you can see the red-hot lava flowing and sputtering down the side of the mountain almost every night. Not to say everyone's cut out for that kind of thing, but if you are, I can sure point you in the right direction. And you know, there's hundreds of little-known spectacular archaeologic ruins and natural wonders, too, that never, ever get seen by people on the tourist trail. For example, there's a huge commercial shopping center in Guatemala City called the Tikal Futura. And the centerpiece of this giant mall complex is a 20-story tall Hilton Hotel. Talk about first world, huh? Well, anyway, just a few years back when they were excavating for the parking lot and the retail stores, guess what? They hit a gigantic Mayan city that was buried underground. In fact, they burrowed right into a Mayan king's tomb. And now, when you're walking through this modern, busy shopping mall, right next to Tommy Hilfiger, Diesel, and TGIF's, there's a little entrance door that says Museum. And when you walk in, you're suddenly inside the burial vault of a king's tomb. Believe it or not, you're in the center of one of those big pyramids. And as you see the shelves and displays of all the little artifacts they dug up that are set along the walls, you realize, when you look down, that you're walking on a thick, plate glass floor. And the king's still there, bones and all, directly beneath your feet, and you can look right at him. He's still there just as he was 1,000 years or so ago. I mean, sure, if you're a traveler, you've probably been in and out of king's tombs here and there, but have you ever seen a perfectly preserved Mayan king's tomb 20 feet from a Chuck E. Cheese? It's one of the oddest things you'll ever see. Anyway, just to give you an idea of some of the things the average gringo tourist is never going to stumble on. And by the way, you know how many people were in that museum the last time I went? About 6. Now, if that little museum was on the tourist trail, let's say in Costa Rica or Panama, you'd have to make a reservation days in advance and it'd probably be 600, maybe 6,000 people there. Anyway, bottom line, if you come down here to one of my seminars and you arrive early or stay later, I'll direct you to some of the very cool things that I've discovered, because I'm thinking maybe you'd like to explore the offbeat but very cool parts of Latin America that only very dedicated travelers know about, or long-term expats who've been off the tourist trail quite a while. And by the way, if you do come down here and hook up with my event coordinator, you'll find she knows where all the deals are. Because you see, I always travel low or medium budget, but never backpacker style. Of course, I like good hotels and nice accommodations, like everyone. But when you do things the way I do, you'll never have to pay $100 for a hotel room. You can always find great hotels for a lot less. That is, unless you're not concerned about money and you want to pay more. In fact, since we're off the tourist trail, many times you don't even have to pay 50. In fact, I know some very nice little hotels for under $20 a night. And yes, you have your own bathroom, and they're not dumps, and they're in very nice locations too. But some of those are my little secrets. And don't send me an email asking me about those places unless you're coming to the seminar. That's all I need is for word to get out. Then when I want to stay at a place cheap and nice, they're all booked up. Anyway, you have to come down here to see it for yourself. So stay tuned for the details on that, and I'll let you know when it's up on the Expat Wisdom website, which should be within a week. And for all you guys and gals who sent me early bird emails to get on the list, you'll get the information first, I promise. And now, I have to report on some breaking news in Bolivia. Bolivia, as you might know, is a very inexpensive place. That is, unless you hang around the places where expats and gringos go. Or you insist on hanging around in those wealthy, upscale parts of the big city where the wealthy Latins and embassy people hang out. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, Bolivia is still pretty much way off the tourist trail, which makes it a country that I highly recommend, except for the fact that Evo Morales' government is not exactly business-friendly, and his Congress of indigenous populists have been ramming through some very heavy-handed legislation that's been scaring the hell out of foreign businessmen lately. So just how does that apply to expats and gringos that would like to relocate down there or are living there already? Well, let's talk cases. For example, this new heavy-handed mining law they just passed. This new law might not go down very well with expats who are planning to buy land. And though at first glance it'll really scare you, it's bad, but not as bad as you might think. Now, get this. This new law that was just enacted allows the Bolivian government to seize 70% of all private and foreign-owned mining concessions without compensating them at all. And it's a law that's been designed to stop foreign and private mining speculation. That is, if the government decides you just purchased the land to speculate, like for example, you just buy it, don't do a thing with it, wait it out without developing it, they can just grab it, well, at least 70% of it. Now, like I said, at first, it sounds bad, like the kiss of death for foreign investors, right? But it was only enacted because, over the years, crooked politicians got rich selling mining rights in Bolivia. And all that happened before Evo Morales' populist government got in, which is one of the reasons he got elected, because the mostly indigenous population of Bolivia were sick of seeing rich private individuals and foreign corporations come in and obtain sweetheart deals from their corrupt governments. And Evo Morales himself, being indigenous, ran on an anti-corruption socialist populist platform. Now, the thing is, at election time, all Latin politicians preach about the same thing. You know, they're going to stop corruption, influence peddling, and give land rights back to the indigenous poor people. But 99% of the time, it's pure election bullshit. And these politicians are as corrupt as the ones that came before. But in Evo Morales' case, he's actually fulfilling many of those promises. Anyway, that new law in Bolivia is directed at foreigners and foreign corporations that bought land or took options out on land for the mining rights only. And the way the new law works, after a state agency confirms that the mining concession is indeed idle, it would be redistributed to other Bolivian industries who supposedly would put it to better use. At least, that's the plan. Now, you know, this is exactly what happened in Venezuela under Hugo Chavez, except he didn't take 70%, he'd take 100% if he felt like it. Since basically, unlike Evo Morales, Chavez was a true dictator, a populist dictator, but a dictator nevertheless. Now, let me tell you why this law isn't as bad as it seems. Or is it? You see, before Evo's populist government got elected, vast tracts of undeveloped land were tied up in these mining concessions. And, you know, all those sweetheart deals and mining options the government gave away so long ago are really infuriating to the local population today, especially now that the Chinese are down, poking around, trying to buy up every concession they can get their hands on. And now that those formerly cheap concessions are being bid up sky high by people like the Chinese, the ones that stand to profit are not the Bolivian people themselves or the Bolivian government, but the foreigners who got those sweetheart deals years ago from earlier, much more corrupt governments than Evo's. But you can see how legislation like this can really be abused. I mean, suppose you bought some land and just didn't get started on developing it right away. I mean, for example, what if your property's rich in copper, but the price of copper is way down, and you'd actually lose money if you built a refinery? So you decide to sit on it and wait a few years till the price goes up. How long is too long before you do some work on it? Do you want the government to decide that? What do they know about the price of copper? They can't even give half of their people clean water 24/7. You get the point? Then again, what if you have 1,000 acres and you put a couple of roads and a few buildings on it? Is that enough development so the law doesn't grab 70%? And how much time do you have to do all that? And let's say you have 100 acres and you find the rich copper ore you're actually looking for in only 10 of those acres, like 10%. And the other 90 acres are non-productive. Does the government just come in, put a fence around it, and give it away to somebody else? Maybe to somebody's brother-in-law in Congress? I mean, this is Latin America, you know. Even if Evo Morales, a man of the people, is president, most of the thousands and thousands of other guys in the government that he inherited are thoroughly corrupt. And if they're not corrupt right now, they do have their price. And it's about whatever pocket change you have at the moment. In fact, I have it from a good source that you can buy off just about any judge down here for around $1,000. I've heard that figure tossed around behind closed doors a lot of times, believe me. You get the point? Anyway, as far as lighting a fire under those stagnant mining concessions, they could have opted for a much better plan, which I've seen done in some countries down in Latin America, where a more modernized, more realistic, and progressive government tries to get those industries to invest without rocking the boat too much and discouraging outside investment. And what some of these more forward-looking governments have done is to institute a sliding scale of progressive taxes on unused and fallow land, which means you either crap or get off the pot, so to speak. So if you are a big landowner or have mining options, and if you know some of that land is really no good to you, you just let it go for taxes, develop it in some other way, farm it, graze it, or put up windmills or whatever, or just put it up for sale. To me, that's a kinder, gentler way of handling the situation. Not perfect, but a better way than just the threat of confiscation, which scares the crap out of foreign investors, especially big foreign investors, who buy lots of land and often don't get around to doing anything with it for quite a while. And by the way, presently, Bolivia has 7,000 legal mining concessions, with about 2,500 of those, about a third, in private or foreign hands that were snapped up a long, long time ago, way before Evo. And of course, those are the ones that are going to get reviewed. And that also means there's a chance for abuse there, too. Who are going to be the first 10, let's say, on the list to be reviewed, and who are going to be the final ones to be reviewed? Since the whole review process of about 2,500 foreign and private concessions, experts are predicting could take up to 10 years, which means 20 or even 25, because this is Latin America, you know. And my prediction is the same thing's going to happen here as happened with Venezuela. In the first year or two, some land will get confiscated and some housing units or projects for the poor will get built and they'll be improperly constructed and go to seed, and a handful of politicians and contractors will get filthy rich over it. So does that sour me on Bolivia? Well, not if you're just going down there to retire or live the good life, but if you're actually going down thinking of starting some big enterprise that involves mining or good-sized tracts of land, well, I think you got the picture. Enough said about that. Oh, here's another short topic I promised a few expats I'd talk about. The thing is, you see, everybody wants to know how much Spanish you really need to really get around down here without a personal translator or someone you call or bug that's bilingual every time you need some help. And I assure you, when you first come down, especially if you're off the tourist trail, you're going to latch on to some bilingual gringo or local that will be happy to help you out with your translations at first. But eventually, that'll put a strain on your friendship if you're not paying him or her, of course. That's one way to lose friends, because it gets old pretty fast. And now I must say, if you've been listening to one of the running themes within my show, I always say, you must get a local lawyer right away and stick with him. And you should get a younger one that speaks English. And I've talked about this on shows before. And how to find a good, honest, inexpensive one, too. Anyway, he and his staff will be your go-to guys when it comes to translations and any bilingual stuff you might need, too. But you don't want to call up your lawyer's office every time you need to fill in a form, read a phone or bank statement, or you need to go to the hardware store, hire a plumber, decorator, electrician, read a manual, or anything like that. Because that's what generally happens when you're down here off the tourist trail and you hang around with gringos and don't bother to learn your Spanish. You're going to end up leaning on your lawyer and a few bilingual friends a lot more than you really should. And that's a trap I see a lot of expats fall into. They never get past that second or third grade rudimentary Spanish phase. In fact, I know more than a few gringos who teach at so-called expensive private schools. They teach English, of course. And some of them have been teaching over 10 years, and their Spanish is still second and third grade level. Why? Because they're teaching English and hanging around with people that speak English, even though they're well off the tourist trail. And when I'm out with one of these guys, and I hear him speaking Spanish to a waiter in a restaurant or whatever, I'm always thinking to myself, God, I hope my Spanish doesn't sound that pathetic. And by the way, here's something I notice about expat gringas who teach English down here in Latin America. They seem to pick up Spanish a lot faster than the men. And I've also noticed that when expat couples come down from the States, married couples, the woman always seems to pick up Spanish much faster than the man. And to his detriment, he ends up leaning on her better knowledge of Spanish for most Spanish translations. In other words, she becomes his crutch. So guys, just a warning here, don't let that happen to you. Though it probably will. But if you decide to live on the tourist trail, all the locals will try to speak English with you, since the tourist trail is, number one, all about getting your dollar. So, to better extract those dollars from you, locals will warm up to you by pitching you with whatever they've got to sell in their version of the English language. Anyway, here's a little tidbit only us long-term expats ever seem to pick up on. Once that day comes when you realize that most Latins around you finally understand what you're saying, not just when you're conversing with your cleaning lady now, since even if your Spanish is wickedly bad, she'll eventually pick up at what you're trying to get at. Just like somehow we fool ourselves into thinking our dog understands what we're saying to him too. What I mean is, in your early days down here, you're going to think your cleaning lady actually understands your Spanish. And the looks on her face when you're talking to her are going to be very positive and reinforcing, even though chances are she only understands 1 out of 5 words that you say. Because you see, she's going to learn your habits, and even if your Spanish is unintelligible to anyone else, she'll pick up on what you're getting at, and that'll tend to make you very overconfident in your Spanish skills. It's like the parents up in the States who think their kids are geniuses. Well, they are until they step out the front door, you know? What I'm saying is, in the confines of your own home, your cleaning lady and gardener will understand what you're saying. They'll get used to your pathetic mangling of their language. However, when you go out of the house, like for example when you have to speak to the garage mechanic, or when you try to converse with a cop or the garbage man, and you're just not getting through to them, that's when about 100% of gringos tend to repeat what they were saying in Spanish, only louder. As if speaking the same Spanish gibberish at higher volume will somehow clarify things the second time around. Well, it won't. But I assure you, the day will come, and it will be a magic moment to celebrate, when the cop or the garage mechanic actually do understand exactly what you're saying. Well, when that revelatory moment comes, not only do we breathe a huge sigh of relief now that the struggle is over, or we think it's over anyway, but funny enough, a lot of expats, after that, never really improve on that third or fourth grade Spanish that seems to be good enough to get through to the locals. Now, I've seen for myself a lot of expats who've been down here 25, even 30 years, and I instantly know they are totally stuck in that rut. They've made it up to about fourth grade level Spanish, and that's where they're going to remain forever. And if they feel that's good enough, well, that's fine. But the thing is, picture the opposite. Someone who only knows English at a fourth grade level trying to communicate with you every day. Imagine you having to deal with a person like that, someone who never gets past his own terribly broken English phase. Wouldn't that kind of drive you nuts? Actually, it's like one long-term expat told me, it's like hitting a brick wall with your Spanish and never knowing it. And basically, there will be no one to really tell you that your Spanish simply sucks, since most locals kind of know what you're saying. At that point, many gringos really don't have any incentive to try to work harder to get it better. What for? Now, I'm not saying you won't pick up new phrases and words along the line, but the fact is, it's the way that gringos conjugate and use the past and present and future that's so lacking and noticeable to the locals, though they'll never say anything to you about it, and they'll almost never correct you. And you know how it is when you're speaking with someone whose English is not their first language, how they often make little errors in conjugation and tense too. And we just accept it and never say a thing because we understand exactly what they're talking about. However, imagine if you're living with a person like that or come in contact with them every day, only to hear the same linguistic errors over and over and over. Being a gringo, you're probably going to want to correct them. However, like I mentioned, Latins are generally too polite to do that to you unless you absolutely force them to do it. And still, you're asking them to do something that kind of rubs against their nature, basically. So the point is here, once you come down and learn your Spanish basics, whether it's in an immersion course or you get a Latin girlfriend or boyfriend, always the real fast track to learning basic Spanish, by the way. Anyway, what I'm saying is don't think you're king of the mountain once you've made that breakthrough where everyone seems to be able to understand you. What I'm saying is we all, including me, have a long way to go. So don't go patting yourself on the back too hard when you ask your maid to cook up some papas con carne and she finally gets it right. Oh, and one more thing about gringos, expats, and their Spanish linguistic gymnastics here. Nearly 100% of gringos and expats who've been down here a while report back to me that they always seem to be able to make Latin people understand what they're saying in Spanish well before, sometimes many months before, the gringo or expat actually begins to understand what the Spanish locals are saying to them. Meaning, you can get your point across to them, but you don't quite get what they're saying back. And believe me, that's totally normal because, first of all, there's 20 Latin countries and each one has its own particular dialect and sub-dialects. And then there's the fact that educated Latins speak quite differently than the uneducated and the poor. Same thing in the States, right? And Latins that live on the Caribbean coast speak a different dialect than Latins living in the mountains. And black Latinos have different dialects too. Think of all the various American dialects. Not to mention the Irish and Scottish and Australian and Canadian versions of English. In fact, I still have some friends up north who don't go to British movies because they don't understand the dialects. And what that just means regarding gringos and expats is that even if you're living, for example, in Santiago, Chile, and you begin to understand the local dialects quite well, there's a really good chance that you won't understand half of the words coming out of the mouth of the Cuban neighbor next door. But if you're down here long enough, you catch on. And one last thing, no matter how good and precise your Spanish becomes, you never lose your gringo accent. At least that's what my Latin friends tell me. Okay, enough about that. Let's move on. Now, guys out there, I mean men, remember in the last show, I made mention of the fact that if you have a girlfriend or a wife down here, whether she's Latina or gringa, if she does have a car, you're going to have to keep that one at least in good repair, or you'll never hear the end of it. You know how that goes. And now I'm strictly talking about the outside of the car. For our wives and girlfriends, we have to keep that looking good too. And I'm talking ding, dent, and scratch free, which is no easy task in Latin America. Believe me. Now, as far as the mechanical condition of the car, the vast majority of us gringos are used to keeping up with manufacturers' guidelines on oil changes and brake jobs and all that stuff. We almost always follow the manufacturer or dealer's service schedule. We were kind of programmed to do that up in the States, just like we were programmed to get car insurance and health insurance and dental checkups every 6 months and all that. And none of that has been routinely programmed into the Latin brain. Down here, it's always maintenance by crisis, which is why at least half of all Latin Americans with cars and trucks either don't have a spare tire or their spare is flat. They're not even on point with such an inexpensive basic thing like that. Anyway, The vast majority of us expats, because of our gringo nature, keep our cars in good mechanical condition. We follow the mechanics' guidelines and change the oil on time and the brakes and all that. Anyway, like I said, you'll find, like I recommend, most gringos let the outside of their cars go, since it's just a losing battle trying to keep it nice. However, you're going to have to fight that losing battle, I mean constantly, with your girlfriend or wife's car. Because women do not like to drive around in a car that looks like a piece of junk. And if there is a dent or a scratch, there will be definite disharmony at the dinner table. Guaranteed. Now, us male expats don't like dents and scratches in our cars either. But after a while, we all reconcile ourselves to the fact that to remain sane on the streets of Latin America and to suppress our gringo gene for lethal road rage, gringo men have to occasionally repeat the immortal words of Kenny Rogers. Know when to hold them and know when to fold them. Which, unfortunately, does not apply to your wife or girlfriend's car. Which means hers is going to be the good car, and yours is going to be the one that's not much taken to dress-up events like birthdays, dinner parties, weddings, and quinceañeros parties. Unless, of course, you're driving there at night. And, like I mentioned before, because Latins grew up in a society with very little personal space, your wife's or girlfriend's car is going to get dinged and banged and smashed and scratched repeatedly, just like yours will. Meaning, because her car is going to get fixed 3 or 4 times a year, minimum, you're going to be on more than a first-name basis with your body man, believe me. Now get this, expat Eddie's body man, his name is Rudolfo. Well, Eddie tells me the guy routinely calls him up every 2 or 3 months, and he asks Eddie if his girlfriend's car is ready for another touch-up. And it always is. And since it's so cheap to have that stuff done down here, Eddie said, for example, the last time his girlfriend's car was in the shop for multiple parking lot dings, it cost him a whopping $75. Now, here's the irony of all that. Almost all the expats I know are the type that really don't give a rat's ass what other people think or say. And I'm not talking just about their cars now. For that matter, we don't wear jewelry or expensive watches or brand-name tennis shoes or sunglasses or any of that crap, even though a lot of us can afford it if we wanted. And we don't buy new cars for ourselves except under special conditions, like I mentioned before. Even if you buy it new, it's a losing battle to keep it looking that way. Like Eddie says, a brand-new car down here is like a blank piece of paper in a kindergarten art class. And then the teacher hands out the crayons. Sure, us gringos and expats like nice things, and the insides of our cars and the insides and the outsides of our houses and businesses reflect that. That's one part of the gringo advantage that always sticks with us. And though our standards in general are much higher than the average Latin person's, as a rule, we don't much give a damn what other people think. Because if we did, we wouldn't have come down to Latin America in the first place. Oops, I'm up against the clock again. That means I'll have to finish this latest expat rant next week, so stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. You know.